Welcome to the Quarterly Briefing, where we take a closer look at the financial stories behind the world's biggest public companies, powered by AI to make it smarter, faster, and more engaging. Our goal is to make financial data more accessible by demystifying the complexities of corporate finance and informing people about the dynamics of today's markets. This podcast is not financial advice. It's for entertainment and educational purposes only. If you're curious about how companies grow, stumble, or pivot in today's fast-paced markets, you're in the right place. This is The Quarterly Briefing, where AI meets numbers and numbers meet narrative.
All right. Let's take a look at J.P. Morgan's third quarter performance in 2024. We've got their 10Q filing right here. And gotta say, it's a bit of a roller coaster.
It's always interesting to see what's going on behind the scenes of a giant like J.P. Morgan, especially in a year with so much going on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Between the First Republic acquisition and the ups and downs in the markets, there's a lot to talk about. But maybe we could start with the big picture. What's the overall story of their Q3?
Well, the main thing is their net income dropped 20%, landing at $13.1 billion. But there's more to it than that. Their net revenue actually went up 2% to $53.1 billion.
So revenue's going up, but profits are shrinking.
Right.
That suggests some pretty interesting things are happening.
Exactly. And if you look a little deeper, three key factors kind of pop out.
Yeah.
You've got flat net interest income, a pretty big jump in asset management fees, and a significant increase in the provision for credit losses.
Okay. Let's take those one by one. Flat net interest income. I thought rising interest rates were supposed to be good for banks.
Well, in theory, yes. But with J.P. Morgan, we're seeing a push and pull. On one side, you've got positive things like more people spending on credit cards, higher revolving balances, and they're getting better returns from their trading and investments. So these are pushing their net interest income up.
So more activity in the economy means more money for J.P. Morgan.
Got it.
What about the other side of that push and pull?
The other side is that their average deposit balance in their consumer banking division actually went down. Plus, there's this thing called deposit margin compression. It's happening across all their business lines. Basically, it means that as interest rates go up, it also costs banks more to get funding, so it squeezes their profits.
So it's this balancing act. They're trying to make money from the rising rates while also managing those increasing costs. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But what about those asset management fees? Those jumped up quite a bit.
Yeah, they did. And this is partly where you start to see J.P. Morgan's strategic decisions playing out. Remember the First Republic acquisition? Well, bringing in First Republic's wealth management business added a big chunk to J.P. Morgan's asset management revenue.
So acquisitions are playing a role here. It's not just natural growth.
Exactly. And that brings us to the third factor, the increase in the provision for credit losses. It gets a little complicated, but it's super important for understanding how J.P. Morgan is dealing with the current economic situation.
Okay, let's unpack it a bit. What exactly does it mean to increase their provision for credit losses?
It basically means they're putting more money aside to cover potential losses from loans that might go bad. It's like they're saying, hey, we're seeing some warning signs in the economy and we need to be ready for more defaults.
Kind of like battening down the hatches for a potential storm.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Mm. And what's interesting is this increase is happening in a few different areas. In their credit card business, it's because of a combination of loan growth and a changing economic outlook. So more people are borrowing, but the chance of them having trouble repaying is also going up.
Makes sense.
But
I think there was something about wholesale loans and real estate too, right?
Right. Their wholesale lending division, which includes loans to businesses and big institutions, is also seeing more risk, particularly in real estate. It suggests there are some concerns about commercial real estate values and whether borrowers will be able to repay their loans.
So this increase in provisions means that J.P. Morgan is being proactive, trying to anticipate problems before they get out of hand.
Exactly. They're analyzing the data, recognizing the risks, and adjusting their plans accordingly.
All right, so we've got flat net interest income because of these competing forces, a bump in asset management fees driven by acquisitions, and this cautious approach to credit risk shown by the increased provisions. It's a lot to process, but I'm starting to get a sense of how J.P. Morgan is navigating these uncertain times.
And we're just getting started. There's so much more in their 10Q, from some unusual accounting moves to what's happening within their different business segments.
Before we get to that, there's one more thing that jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm.
This whole Visa share exchange thing. You don't see a bank making billions from a stock swap every day.
You're right. That's a fascinating one. So JP Morgan essentially swapped some of their Class B1 shares for a mix of Class B2 and Class C shares. It resulted in a $7.9 billion gain on paper.
Okay. But why would they do that? What's the strategy?
Well, it gets even more interesting because then they turned around and got rid of all those Class C shares, some through sales and some through a donation to their foundation.
So it was a planned move to get a one-time gain and then use those shares for a specific reason.
It definitely looks that way. It just shows that big financial institutions like JP Morgan operate on a whole other level of financial complexity. They're playing a different game. And this Visa share exchange is a perfect example.
Okay, I'm ready to learn more about that game. What else did you find in their 10Q that you think we should explore?
Well, let's start by taking a closer look at their balance sheet. There are some pretty interesting changes there that I think give us some clues about their priorities and how they're managing their money in this kind of unpredictable environment.
All right, lead the way. I'm all ears.
Welcome back.
All right, so before we got sidetracked, we were starting to get into JP Morgan's balance sheet and some of the strategic shifts that are happening there. Anything that jumps out at you?
Yeah. One of the most noticeable changes is that they've got way less cash and deposits with banks.
So they're holding less cash. But doesn't that seem a little counterintuitive with all the economic uncertainty going on?
I know it might seem that way. But it actually points to a strategic shift. It could be that they're moving those funds into investments that will give them a better return, taking advantage of where rates are right now. Or maybe they're using that cash to bolster their capital in case things get tough later on.
Interesting. So not necessarily a sign that they're scared, more like a calculated move to make the most of their resources.
Exactly. And this kind of connects with another change on their balance sheet. They've got a big increase in what they call federal funds purchased and securities loaned or sold under repurchase agreements. So it looks like they're doing more short-term borrowing and lending.
Okay, so help me out here. Why would they increase short-term borrowing while they're also reducing their cash?
It's complicated. But basically, they're probably trying to take advantage of the differences in short-term interest rates. They might be borrowing at lower rates and then lending or investing that money at higher rates, so they boost their net interest income.
Ah, I see. So it's a way to make more profit from how the market is right now. Kind of like a high-stakes game.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it just goes to show that JP Morgan, like any big financial institution, is always looking for ways to optimize their balance sheet and squeeze out the most returns.
Okay, so they're making strategic moves with their cash and getting involved in more of these short-term deals. What else does their balance sheet tell us about where their focus is?
Well, if you look at their loan portfolio, we can see continued growth, especially in their credit card business. This suggests that they're pretty confident about consumer spending, even with rise in interest rates and inflation.
But didn't we talk earlier about how they increased their provisions for credit losses, especially in that credit card area? Doesn't that contradict this idea of confidence in the consumer market?
It's not really a contradiction. It's more about finding that sweet spot between growth and caution. They're expanding their loans, which can be profitable, but they're not blind to the fact that there could be more missed payments and defaults down the road.
So it's calculated risk. They're not pulling back on lending completely. But they're also not ignoring the warning signs.
Right. And it's a tough balance that all banks are trying to figure out right now. Speaking of calculated risks, let's talk about JP Morgan's acquisition of First Republic. It was a huge deal in the banking industry, and it's already having a big impact on their numbers.
Yeah, that was big news. I remember everybody was talking about it. What does it look like in their Q3 results?
Well, like we talked about earlier, it's definitely contributed to the growth in their asset management fees, but it's also had an effect on their capital requirements. Taking on First Republic increased their what they call eligible LTD to RWA ratio. Basically, it shows the added risk they're taking on by absorbing all of First Republic's assets and liabilities.
So bigger bank, bigger risks, and more attention from regulators.
Exactly. But we should also remember that acquisitions can be really valuable in the long run if they're managed well. JP Morgan has a good track record of successful integrations, so they're probably banking on First Republic being a good addition in the end.
Makes sense. It's a gamble, but one that could pay off big time if they play it right.
Now, moving on from the balance sheet, there are a few other things worth looking at that tell us more about JP Morgan's performance and strategy. Let's start with some of their key business segments. How about their banking and payments division? This has been a strong area for them with consistent revenue growth.
Yeah, I'm curious. What's driving their success there?
It's a few things. They've seen great growth in their payments business, fueled by the increasing move towards digital transactions. Plus, they're benefiting from higher asset management fees and more commissions from annuity sales.
So they've got multiple sources of revenue within that segment. It's like a portfolio within a portfolio.
That's a great way to think about it. It shows their ability to adapt to how consumers are behaving and the way markets are moving. They're not just sticking with traditional banking services. They're constantly coming up with new ideas and expanding into new areas.
All right, so that's banking and payments. What about their asset and wealth management division? How did they do in Q3?
This segment also saw strong growth, but remember, the First Republic acquisition and the Visa share gain played a big role in boosting those numbers.
Right. Those were one-time things.
Yeah.
But even without those, it sounds like they're doing pretty well, right?
Yeah. Their core businesses in this area are definitely getting a boost from favorable market conditions and growing demand for wealth management services. More and more people are looking for expert advice to navigate these unpredictable markets and plan for their financial future. So institutions like J.P. Morgan are in a good spot to benefit from that.
It sounds like they're really firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Okay, what about their corporate segment? How did that Visa donation and the FDIC assessment impact their financials?
Well, those two definitely took a bite out of their profits for the quarter. But they managed to offset some of that with revenue from other areas and by being smart about managing expenses.
They're like they're juggling a million things at once. They take a hit here, make adjustments there, and somehow keep everything moving forward.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And it highlights how important diversification and flexibility are for a global institution like J.P. Morgan. They have to be able to handle shocks, adjust to changing conditions, and constantly be on the lookout for new opportunities to grow and make a profit.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground. From the changes in their balance sheet to the acquisitions to how their key business segments are performing. But there's one more area I want to talk about before we move on risk management. With all the ups and downs in the markets and the uncertainty in the economy, how is J.P. Morgan handling all the risks they're facing?
Risk management is like the foundation of everything a bank like J.P. Morgan does. They've got whole teams dedicated to constantly assessing and managing risks across their entire operation, from their investment portfolio and their exposure to the market to credit risks and making sure their operations are secure.
Sounds kind of overwhelming, like a never-ending battle.
Yeah, it can feel that way. But they've got these really sophisticated systems and strategies to stay ahead of the game. They use complex models and analytical tools to find potential weaknesses and come up with ways to protect themselves.
So they're not just waiting for things to happen. They're trying to see them coming. But what are some of the specific risks that they're most worried about right now?
Well, one of the biggest worries for any bank right now is credit risk. Like we discussed, they've already increased their provisions for credit losses, but they're keeping a close eye on their loan portfolios for any signs of trouble.
So they're watching those borrowers who might be having a tough time making their payments. What about market risk? How are they managing their exposure to those crazy market swings?
They have a bunch of strategies to mitigate market risk, things like hedging, diversification, and stress testing. They also keep a close eye on key indicators in the market, like interest rates, currency exchange rates, and commodity prices.
It seems like they're always on high alert, watching for any signs of danger. But it's not just about what's happening outside, right? What about internal risks like operational failures or cybersecurity threats?
You're absolutely right. Operational risk covers a whole range of potential threats, from human error and system failures to cyber attacks and fraud. J.P. Morgan invests a ton of money in cybersecurity internal controls and employee training to try to minimize these risks.
So they're building up this multi-layered defense system to protect their operations from threats both inside and out. That's a huge undertaking.
It is, but for a global financial institution like J.P. Morgan, good risk management isn't just a nice to have, it's crucial to their survival.
Well said. All right, so we've looked at J.P. Morgan's balance sheet, their key business segments, and how they manage risk. We're getting a pretty comprehensive picture of their performance and their overall strategy.
And that leads us perfectly into the last part of our deep dive, where we'll take a step back and put everything together. We'll highlight the most important takeaways and talk about what they might mean for J.P. Morgan, the banking industry as a whole, and the wider economy.
All right, so we've spent a lot of time digging into J.P. Morgan's third quarter, everything from their balance sheet moves to their approach to risk. What are the big takeaways here?
Well, I think a big theme is adaptation. They're not just reacting to the current economy. They're actively shaping their strategy to take advantage of opportunities and reduce risks.
So not just riding the waves, but steering the ship.
Exactly. And a good example of this is how they're managing their balance sheet. We saw how they're reducing their cash holdings, maybe moving that money to higher yield investments or using it to strengthen their capital.
Right. And they're also doing more short-term borrowing and lending, which seems like a way to make more profit in this interest rate environment.
Exactly. They're playing this complex game of optimization, always looking for ways to get the best returns and stay ahead of the competition.
Now, their acquisition of First Republic really stood out to me. Seems like a bold move in such a shaky banking climate.
Yeah, it was a bold move, and it definitely has risks. But it also shows their long-term vision and their confidence in being able to integrate First Republic and make it work for them.
So it's a calculated risk, but one that could have a big payoff if they do it right.
Exactly. And it reminds us that JP Morgan, just like any big financial institution, is always looking at their place in the market, searching for ways to grow, and making strategic bets on the future.
We also talked about how they're doing in different parts of their business.
Okay.
Banking and payments look strong, while the corporate segment took some hits because of those one-time charges.
Right. Their diversified business model is a strength, but also a challenge. It lets them handle problems in some areas while growing in others. But it also means they have to manage each part carefully and make smart choices about where to put their resources.
And speaking of challenges, that increase in their provision for credit losses definitely signals that they're expecting some bumps in the road, especially with credit cards.
Absolutely. That's something anyone following JP Morgan or the banking industry needs to pay attention to. Rising interest rates, inflation, and slower economic growth all make things tougher for lenders.
So even though they're taking steps to manage those risks, it's something investors and analysts will be watching closely.
Definitely. Credit risk is a huge factor when you're looking at a bank's performance and what might happen down the line.
You know, one thing that really struck me was their focus on risk management. They seem incredibly vigilant, always analyzing data, looking for weak spots, and putting plans in place to protect themselves.
For an institution as big and complex as JP Morgan, managing risk effectively is crucial. They operate globally, facing tons of potential threats, from economic downturns and volatile markets to cyber attacks and changes in regulations.
It's almost like they're trying to predict the future and be ready for anything.
Well, they may not have a crystal ball, but they do have some of the brightest minds in finance building sophisticated models and systems to identify and manage those risks. That's ultimately what gives them the ability to navigate the ever-changing world of finance.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into JP Morgan's third quarter, what's the message for our listeners?
I think the key takeaway is that JP Morgan is a complex and dynamic institution in a complex and dynamic world. Their performance reflects both the good and the bad in the current financial landscape. They're making strategic moves, taking calculated risks, and adapting to whatever comes their way, all while trying to stay at the top of the global banking industry.
Well said. It's been a fascinating look at their 10Q.
I hope this deep dive has given everyone a better understanding of how JP Morgan works and the broader forces at play in the world of finance.
And for those who want to learn even more, be sure to visit JP Morgan's Investor Relations website. There's a ton of information there, including the full 10Q report and other financial disclosures.
Keep learning, keep exploring, and until next time, stay curious.
This is the Quarterly Briefing, a W Section podcast production. This podcast was generated completely with AI. If you like the podcast, please give us a like and tell your friends. If you have feedback or different companies you would like us to include in a future episode, please send us an email at idea@quarterlybriefing.com. Thank you for listening.